The first time Nathan saw Natalie, she was making coffee in his kitchen with hands that moved like his and patience he did not own. The monitor showed a room almost identical to the apartment behind him, same cracked tile near the stove, same narrow window over the sink. Same ugly green mug from the university gift shop. Only the person lifting the kettle was different. She was 37, as he was. Tall, as he was. Pale, with the same tired gray eyes and the same crease between the brows. Her hair fell to her shoulders in a dark, practical cut. She wore black trousers, a soft blue blouse, and a lab badge clipped at the waist. The badge read, Dr. Natalie Reed. Nathan stepped back from the console. No, he said. The lab did not answer. The vacuum pumps kept their low, steady growl. Green status lights blinked along the quantum array. On the monitor, Natalie poured coffee, burned her finger, and swore with his mouth. That was the detail that undid him. Not the blouse, not the name, not the body that was almost his and not his, the curse, exact rhythm, exact irritation. Exact small shake of the wrist afterward. Nathan Reed had built the parallel observation rig to test decoherence models, not to spy on a version of himself who bought better coffee. For 3 weeks, he told no one. He came in early. He stayed late. He adjusted calibration logs so the access records looked like ordinary refinement. He watched Natalie in short bursts, always promising himself the next session would be the last. Natalie lived 8 probability branches away, if his math was right. Her world shared the same city, the same university, and almost the same weather. She taught theoretical physics in the same lecture hall. She kept the same bad posture at the blackboard. She forgot lunch. She rubbed her left temple while grading. She owned the same green mug. Yet she moved through rooms differently. Students interrupted Nathan and apologized. Students interrupted Natalie and waited for her to finish being annoyed. Nathan sat through faculty meetings with his hands folded until someone asked for numbers. Natalie leaned back, asked one precise question, and made administrators rephrase nonsense. Nathan began keeping notes. He told himself the notes proved discipline. That was easier than admitting he had become a man inventing reasons to watch another version of himself make coffee. The first notebook stayed in the lab safe and contained respectable data, frequency drift, channel stability, optical bleed, branch distance estimates that would make Priya swear if she knew he was running them alone. The second notebook stayed in his coat pocket. In that one, the entries were not respectable. Natalie drinks coffee with milk. Natalie touches her left earring when annoyed. Natalie owns the green sweater I almost bought in March. Natalie does not apologize before disagreeing. The last note embarrassed him so badly he crossed it out. Then he wrote it again, because embarrassment had never made a fact less factual. At first, the notes were scientific. Clothing variations, career divergences, social patterns. Then they became less defensible. Natalie wears blue when she expects conflict. Natalie smiles less than people want, and more than I do. Natalie owns red earrings and does not treat them as a joke. His colleague Priya caught him staring at the dark monitor one night. You look guilty, she said. That is my thinking face. Your thinking face looks dead. This is guilt. Nathan minimized the data window too fast. Priya crossed her arms. Are you sleeping? Enough. That means no. He was 40 minutes from showing her the impossible. He was also 40 minutes from losing control of the only room where Natalie existed. I am close to something, Nathan said. Then write it down before it eats you. After Priya left, Nathan opened the channel again. Natalie sat on her apartment floor surrounded by old photographs. She held one in both hands. Nathan adjusted the resolution and saw their mother, younger, standing beside a child in a yellow raincoat. Nathan remembered that raincoat. He had hated it because boys at school called it pretty. Natalie touched the photograph and smiled with a grief he recognized from his own body. For the first time, Nathan wondered what Natalie saw when she imagined him, if she imagined him at all. The communication protocol began as an accident. He increased the array intensity to test whether reflected photons could be stabilized across the branch. Natalie looked up. She looked directly at the observation point. Nathan stopped breathing. On the monitor, Natalie crossed the room and stood in front of the blank space where his own apartment wall would have held a bookshelf. She lifted one hand. The screen filled with static. When it cleared, she held a notebook. "Who is there?" Nathan's hands shook so badly he typed the first reply wrong twice. He sent a pulse through the display field. The letters appeared as light on her wall. "Nathan." Natalie stared. Then she wrote, "Of course." Their first conversations were cautious. Names, dates, equations, shared memories, divergent ones. Natalie remembered their father teaching her how to change a tire while saying she should never depend on a man with clean hands. Nathan remembered the same afternoon, but their father had said a man needed to know his own tools. Natalie remembered buying a black dress for a graduate banquet and feeling armored. Nathan remembered renting a tux that made him feel like a waiter in his own life. Neither memory canceled the other. That made them worse to hold. They began meeting at midnight, because both universes seemed to respect fatigue. Nathan brought tea to the lab and sat with his shoes off under the console. Natalie sat in her apartment with her knees drawn up, notebook in her lap, the green mug near her ankle. The delay between typed light and handwritten reply varied, sometimes a second, sometimes 20. Nathan learned to read the delay as mood. Natalie asked about his clothes first. "Why do you dress like a grant application?" Nathan looked down at his gray shirt and dark trousers. "Because I own mirrors," he typed. She smiled at that. Then she lifted a page. "Mirrors are not the problem. Instructions are." The sentence bothered him for 2 days. He began cataloging small differences with less scientific pride. Natalie owned nail polish, though she wore it badly and chipped it against lab equipment. Natalie had dated a violinist named Mara for 3 years, then ended it because both of them loved work more honestly than each other. Natalie had argued with their father at 22 and not spoken to him for 6 months. Nathan had swallowed the same argument and received a used car for graduation. One night, Natalie held up a photograph of herself at a conference in Berlin. She stood beside a poster, wearing a black dress and red earrings. The body language startled him, not because it was feminine, but because it was unafraid of being read. Nathan typed, "I do not think I know how to stand like that." Natalie read the line and looked at him through the camera. Her reply came slowly. "I learned because they looked anyway." That was the first answer that sounded less like freedom and more like cost. After that, Nathan stopped treating her world as the kinder draft. Natalie had been interrupted in lectures, credited less in committee notes, and once introduced as Dr. Reed's assistant beside her own equation. She had learned confidence partly because the alternative was disappearance. Nathan had disappeared differently. That recognition left neither of them victorious. One night, Natalie wrote, "Do you resent me?" Nathan stared at the sentence until the letters dimmed. He typed, "I envy you." She read it and looked away. Then she wrote, "I envy the way your world expected less explanation." He had not thought of that. The machine degraded after 6 weeks of communication. Heat marks appeared on the array housing. Microfractures spread through the containment glass. Priya found the anomalies and forced a confession by standing in front of the lab door until Nathan ran out of lies. When she saw Natalie on the monitor, Priya sat down hard. "That is you," Priya said. "No," Nathan said. "Yes, not only." Priya looked at him, then at Natalie. "Does she know I can see her?" Natalie held up a note. "Hello, Priya. Your hair is shorter there." Priya whispered, "I need several minutes." They had less than a day. The array would fail if Nathan kept the channel open. Priya insisted on shutting it down. Nathan refused, until Natalie wrote one final page and held it so close the camera struggled to focus. "You are not a failed version of me." He read it once, twice. Natalie turned the page. "Do not make me a prison by calling me proof." He stepped away from the console. "She is right," Priya said. "I know. Do you?" Nathan looked at the monitor. Natalie waited, not smiling, not comforting him with an ending she did not owe. "No," he said, "but I can start." The array shut down at 3:16 in the morning. The screen went black. No static, no fade. One moment, Natalie stood in her blue blouse with a notebook in her hand. The next, Nathan saw only his reflection in the dead monitor. He did not cry until Priya left. 2 months later, Nathan published a cautious paper that mentioned no person, no name, no blue blouse. The department praised the mathematics and argued over funding. Priya watched him like a guard with coffee. At home, Nathan changed smaller things. He bought better coffee. He asked one direct question in a faculty meeting and let the room be uncomfortable. He wore a soft green shirt because he liked the fabric, then survived the day without explaining it. The green shirt produced no miracle. A graduate student complimented the color. Nathan said thank you and then ruined the moment by explaining the sale price. Priya watched from the doorway with a face that said she would be kind enough not to laugh until later. At lunch, he went to the same cafe Natalie favored in her universe. In his world, the awning was red instead of yellow. He ordered soup and sat by the window. When the server called him darling by habit, Nathan almost corrected her, then did not. The word sat beside the spoon, harmless and strange. He opened a notebook and wrote down questions he could no longer send. What do you do with envy after it stops being useful? Did you ever feel like a borrowed answer? Which parts of you are mine to keep? The last question embarrassed him. He crossed it out, then wrote it again on the next line, because embarrassment had never been proof of error. Priya found the notebook later in the lab and did not read it. She only tapped the cover. Is this science? No. Good. You were becoming unbearable. He smiled. Was? Hope is a professional courtesy. She sat beside him on the lab floor because the chairs were covered in cables and neither of them wanted to move anything that might become symbolic. What do you want from her? Priya asked. I do not know. Try knowing badly. Nathan looked at the dark monitor. At first, I wanted proof that another version of me made a cleaner choice. And now? Now I think that was lazy. It was. You are very comforting. I am very tired. He laughed, then stopped because the laugh came too close to crying. I wanted her to tell me whether I am supposed to be different, he said. Priya's voice softened. She cannot. I know. Knowing is not the same as stopping. That was the problem. Science rewarded persistence. So did loneliness, in its cruel way. Nathan had built a machine to look across impossible distance and found that the most impossible distance remained between observation and permission. The next day, he placed the second notebook in the lab safe beside the first. Not hidden, not public, documented, but not submitted to anyone else's appetite. For a week, he did not try to reopen the channel. That was harder than any calibration. He discovered how often longing disguises itself as work. Every unscheduled hour became an argument. The array was stable. The math was incomplete. A responsible scientist would gather more data. A lonely man would say the same thing in a cleaner font. Priya caught him standing at the console on the sixth night. Is the machine on? No. Are you about to turn it on? No. Are you lying? Not yet. She nodded and handed him a paper cup of coffee. Progress. They drank in front of the dead screen. Nathan expected silence to make the room unbearable. Instead, it made space for smaller questions. What color did he actually like when Natalie was not visible? What did he want his students to hear in his voice? Which parts of his life had he mistaken for proof because no alternate version had contradicted them? None of those questions required a quantum event. That evening, Nathan stood before his bathroom mirror with the green shirt unbuttoned at the throat. He tried to imagine Natalie behind the glass and failed. Then he tried to imagine himself without her supervision. That was harder. On a rainy Thursday, he opened the file where he had stored Natalie's last image. He did not open the image. Instead, he created a new document and typed two words, "Dear Natalie." He had no way to send it. That did not make writing useless.